Shalom and welcome again to another edition of Secrets of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. These podcasts are presented to help explore the impact of the longevity revolution on our congregations and community. And we invite you to visit our website, jewishsacredaging.com, and the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. If you'd like to leave a message or voicemail message for us, go to the voicemail icon on the homepage, or you can email me directly at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And with great pleasure, we welcome to the microphone an old friend, Dr. Tom Cole, the McGovern Chair and Director of McGovern Center for Humanities and Ethics, the University of Texas Health Science Center, famous author, award-winning filmmaker, raconteur, renaissance man, and author of a brand new book that got rave reviews in the Wall Street Journal in January. The book is called Old Man Country, My Search for Meaning Among the Elders. Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Hello, Rabbi.
Oh, Rabbi. We've known each other.
You can
call me Richard, please, or Richie or whatever.
Okay, Richie.
We've known each other for a while.
I haven't seen you in a long time. At least I can talk to you here.
Yeah, well, I'll hopefully see you in the end of March when I get
to
Houston.
Yep.
So, Tom, this new book, and again, got a great review in the Wall Street Journal in January. You examine people over the over 80 years of age. Why this particular approach? And following up on that real fast, because you start the book in the beginning of the book talking about the fourth age of life, and you equate that with people over the age of 80. Could you walk us through that?
Sure.
Background of that?
Well, there are two. There's a personal reason, and there's sort of a scientific reason. I mean, the personal reason is when I turned 60, in that decade of my 60s, I was very physically challenged. Surgeries, pneumonia, different kinds of debility that put me on the verge of frailty. And I wanted to know what it was like in the future, whether I got stronger again or whether I was going to continue to be frail. I wanted to talk to people who've been there, people about 10 years older than me, perhaps 15. So it's sort of like in Plato's Republic, Socrates is talking to the old man Cephalus and says, I really love to talk to old men because you've gone someplace that I have yet to go. And I want to know whether it's hard or rough or what can you tell me about? It's that kind of a book, and it's based, as you know, on interviews and encounters with 12 very accomplished American men, including Rabbi Sam Karf, whom we both know and love here in Houston. And you know, frankly, we're going to get to the fourth age. Most of us are going to get there. If you turn 65. Chances are you're going to make it to 85. And so what we have begun to call the fourth age is the stage of life, the age of life that's sometimes called the old. It's people who are 80 and above or who have begun to be frail. It's a vague term, but it's a really important category because we don't know much about people's reality. And we're used to the much more comfortable images and ideas of the third age, where we learn a lot, where we're still sexy. We can be on the cover of the AARP because we look so good. All these images of the third age, which is basically trying to look like and act like and be like middle age, which is not a bad thing. It's a fine thing. It's just that we tend to suppress and deny and ignore the reality of people in the fourth age. And that's what I was really trying to overcome in this work.
So like you said, there's a series of interviews with men over the age of 80 telling their story in a conversation with you. But you start with a reference to a midrash, which you write, when each of us is born, an angel swoops down and slaps us on the bottom and whispers, grow. And then you write, the problem is that most of us stop listening in midlife. We think there is no more growing to do. that you believe that a good old age requires growth, which requires conscious effort and intention. And you say that the book is premised on the idea that however old we are, there is always a green growing edge in our story, always a hidden path of personal growth. It's very Jewish, very forward-looking into the, you know, Star Trek imagery of going to a place where we, you know, do not know. How come, though, so many people stop growing? Are there, is there a fear? Is there a fear as we get older of growing and experiencing the new?
Well, I think ageism is one very important reason why we are afraid. Because ageism, the dominant cultural way of negative stereotypes and devaluing people who are old or show that they're old, has really awful effects when it comes to how we tend to internalize the badness of growing old. So we don't want to in any way look frail. We don't want to internalize, because we internalize the norm that being really old is bad. So if you're feeling bad and you don't want to live in the reality of your present, it's hard to grow. But I talked to Rabbi Karf about this in my interviews with him a few years ago. And I said, so what's it like to be an old man? How do you see it? How do you live it? And one of the things he said, and this is about frailty, he said, I am an old man. Now he's 87. He said, I say I'm an old man, and I claim that term honorably. I'm not ashamed of it. And I asked him about frailty. He said, I have become more compassionate towards my own body. That is, he's not holding himself to the standards of strength that he used to have. And that kind of acceptance frees him, I think, to continue to grow. So he's not holding on to the past, but he's opening himself to the future. And Sam is someone who, of course, says the daily morning prayer, Mode Ani Lefanecha, thanking God for restoring our souls. And he also thanks God for other blessings in his life, and he will name them within this prayer. And it's that way he starts the day in gratitude, in openness, and with being alert to new information, to new feelings, to new relationships. And also, growing is not always growing up. You grow down. But do you continue to develop? Do you continue to think of yourself as on a path to God? Are you in relationship to God? And what does that mean?
Well, he does. You have this great quote from him in your interview with him, where he says, disease, old age, and death are not the punishment for original sin. Right. They're the price we pay for being flesh and blood human beings who live in a natural world, which I think is a great image. It's part of the price. And the gratitude thing is also, this also comes through in a lot of your interviews, this idea of reaching a certain stage. You have this interview with Dr. Newland of blessed memory, who wrote one of the great books. And he talks a little bit about fear and love. And so I wanted to ask you, in your understanding of your work with Sherwin Newland, fear and love, are these in your interview, but also in your personal journey, are these two competing forces as we get older? Fear and love, a fear of death and a greater appreciation of love?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. Shep, who died a few years ago, was Jewish, wrote a memoir about his Jewishness and his struggles, because he came from the culture of Yiddishkeit. And that was part of his aging as well, is to integrate a Jewish identity wasn't a matter of failure. It was a matter of truth and claiming it. So the relationship between fear and love, wow. I don't remember what Shep said about this, but my first reaction is to be in love, to open yourself to love, is a very vulnerable thing. As you know, because you counseled me probably 15 years ago when I fell in love. And I quote you in the book. Never forget what you said. You said, because I wasn't sure what to do. I was in love, but I was already married. And you said to me, who are you to turn away a gift that God gave you? And, you know, this still brings tears to my eyes, because what you were saying was, don't be afraid. You know, follow your heart. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of the love, and don't dissociate the love from God. And that helped me enormously. I was afraid. I was afraid of being perceived as a bad person because, you know, honestly, it was a violation of my marriage vows. And I was not only afraid, I felt guilty. But I was afraid I would be rejected. I was afraid it wouldn't work out. I was afraid of many, many things. And in order, I had to set aside those fears. I had to find support to allow my love to flourish and grow. And I, you know, I still need to thank you for, you are one of the people who enabled me to overcome the fear and be open to the love.
So that this tension, though, I think it plays out, and I'll just, because I got this through reading the book and the interviews, that as we begin to contemplate our own mortality, which is a natural fear.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're getting at. Yeah.
Yeah. And the holding on and the love of life, it really also sparked one of the interviews. You channel Heschel in The Need to Be Needed.
Yeah.
And there is this quote that you say, because our society provides old people with no widely shared meanings or norms by which to live, the task of finding significance in later life falls to individuals in their relationships with family and community. And it sparked some thought in my own mind that I wanted to ask you about this need to be needed vis-a-vis yeah. the current just explosion in isolation and loneliness amongst people in this yeah. fourth age of life.
Yeah. It's very hard for people who have been successful in life, who have had jobs, who have been influential, on whom many people depended, many people needed them, to move into a stage of life where they're not needed in the old way. Well, let me go back to fear and see if we can get to meanings. Fear and love. I don't know what you were getting at from the interview with Newland, but one of the things I found that was very heartening to me is that as people got to be very old and suffered through many different kinds of physical ailments, including dementia. I spoke to a person in mid-dementia.
Right.
Their fear declined. They weren't as afraid. They were not afraid of death. They didn't want to die, but they were not afraid of death. And I think it freed them to love life by not being as afraid of death. But one thing that occurred to me the other day on the issue of the need to be needed, you know, like normally we think of, well, when we retire, who needs us? And therefore, what are we?
Mm-hmm.
But I realized the other day that I didn't speak to anybody who conceived of being dependent and being unable, needing help with the activities of daily living, who conceived of their own dependence or their own needs as giving someone else the opportunity to need to be needed. In other words, when you're frail and dependent, you give someone else the opportunity to care for you, to be needed. And, you know, I don't want to downplay all the difficult things about, especially for women, and problems of income. But I do think there's a subtle and often unappreciated way in which to receive, to be able to receive, is to give another person the gift of being needed.
All right, it's the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, of visiting or caring. And in essence, this is one of the conversations that we've had, but you and I and some other colleagues have had, as people become frail or even with issues of dementia and Alzheimer's, you're still being a conduit, a vehicle for the doing of a mitzvah, which in itself is of a high value.
Right. I wish we could help more people see that.
Yeah, well, it's what's part of, I think it comes also through in some of the interviews, is in that quote that some of the stuff that you write about in the book, is there just isn't the culture of ageism or whatever it is still not ready to embrace, even though the media is starting to embrace people in this fourth age, dealing with just being exciting and alive, because there's still this perception, as you alluded to, of frailty rather than energy.
Right.
The interviews are all men over the age of 80, and in the title of the book again is Old Man Country, My Search for Meaning Among the Elders. Why is it still so difficult for men to talk about these issues?
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to try to break through. I mean, people have asked me, well, what about women? Why didn't you write about women? And I usually say, I'm a man and I wanted to learn about men. I wanted to learn what it's like and help them think about what it's like. And honestly, it took a lot of urging and cajoling and joking to get them, many of them, to open up to what their daily experience is really like. They tended to want to talk about their accomplishments. And, you know, I had academics who had published many books, and they wanted to talk to me about their books. I kept saying, I know what's in your books. I want to talk to you about what it's like to get up in the morning. And he said to me, this is George Valent, the psychiatrist researcher. He said, you don't want to know what happened yesterday when I got up and I went to lunch. I said, yes, I do. Exactly. That's what I want. I want to know how it felt. I wanted to know what you were thinking. I want to know what you needed. Were you sick? Did you feel well? Were you depressed? Because that's the kind of thing, as you say, that people have a hard time talking about and therefore giving meaning to. They denigrate their own experience, especially their own experience of frailty. They think of it as a form of failure, rather than a form of experience that needs to be explored and given meaning.
Is it still, well, let me, in your experience of all these interviews and then reflecting on your own experience, how different is it for men to age than as women age? We don't all do it the same. And how important is it for, or how impactful is it for people who have been, because you do interview, the people that you're talking about are high achievers. Let's be clear about this.
Right.
I mean, they're very high achievers, and all of a sudden had to adjust, and some adjusted better than others. But it's just still the society, still men just don't seem to want to talk about this. You're right. We'll go to, this is what I did. These are the awards I won. I was a vice president of this. I did that. As opposed to, well, how do you feel?
Right. Yeah.
Why do we still have so much problem as men dealing with this?
You know, I think it's just a sort of an ongoing cultural restriction that we have to keep fighting. I mean, you know, it's a cliche, but men are not, like you say, often in touch with their feelings. They think, but they don't feel. They don't connect their heart and their head. They don't value friendships as much as women. They're afraid. They don't value relationships in general. They tend to think of themselves as failures when they become dependent, rather than as valued members of a community or a family, much more than women. Women tend to have wider networks of relationships. They tend to think and feel together. And one of the interesting things that I've noticed over the years is that women are more at home in their physically declining bodies than men. And I think it's because if they've had children, their body has been out of their control already. They are used to what happened when they couldn't control their body. The process of birthing was out of their control. They got used to that, and it made it easier for them, I really believe, often to adjust to forms of bodily sickness or injury that are out of their control as well.
Tom, do you think that the aging of the baby boomer men is going to change that? Because I seem to, and I may be projecting my own whatever, but I do sense a little bit of a shift in that more and more baby men are more, and this is, I think, in large part due to the women's movement, who've allowed men to discuss this in many ways. But do you see a beginning of a shift?
A little bit. Not enough from my point of view. Mm-hmm. And I have nothing against Viagra or Cialis. Right? The people I interviewed, for them to become impotent or no longer to be able to get an erection, that was just a natural part of life, and they adjusted to it. People of the baby boom generation are much more likely to think of it as a disease or something that can be treated. Mm-hmm. And I have no problem with that. I think it's a good thing. But it's also a reflection of the desire to remain in physical control and to think of yourself as not as much of a man if you can't do it.
Well, that's
I don't think that's changed among baby boomers, or if it has, it hasn't changed enough. And that's one of the things that I would hope that this book would help to help people think about, because there are many forms of sexual and erotic gratification that do not depend on erection and orgasm, but they depend on a mutual give and take of what people need and what they have to give. And sexual pleasure comes in different forms as you get older.
Yeah, that's why I like to use the term intimacy, because the intimacy can include a whole variety of different things which are equally as important as we get older.
Right.
Again, we're talking with Tom Cole, Dr. Thomas R. Cole, the author of Old Man Country, My Search for Meaning Among the Elders. Oxford University Press, Amazon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Tom, the men that you interviewed come from a variety of different religious backgrounds as well. So I got to ask you, in your impression, walking away as you finish this and in your own understanding, how important was faith to these men?
Well, it varied, of course. Walter Wink was, in his day, a very famous radical Protestant theologian. And he had a Lewy body dementia. He was pretty far into it when I interviewed him, and it was a very hard conversation. But according to his wife, at a certain point, I don't know if it was depression or physical frailty, he turned to his wife and he said, "I want to go home to Jesus." Well, that's an example of someone for whom his Christian faith was crucial. Mm-hmm. Although there's a really interesting story about him. He at a certain point, he sort of didn't see any point about God. He was mad at God. And then they took him off a medication, oxycodone, which you know, is one of the forms of one of the drugs that creates addiction. They took him off that and he felt better and his faith in God returned. So he said that he had a he had an experience of chemical atheism.
There's a lot of that going around. I would assume. But the faith was important to these individuals in a variety of different, not necessarily traditional or go to church, go to synagogue, but there was a, I picked that up in a lot of these individuals. And you also had this interview with Ram Dass, who just recently passed away.
Yes.
And his whole experience, you know, comes through in the role of faith. So this is really important. This is really important from your perspective, or is this really important from your perspective based upon your interviews?
Yeah, this is why I admire and appreciate so much what you're doing with sacred aging and conscious aging. It's a way of bringing people back into relationship with our Jewish tradition as a form, as a way to cultivate meaning and relationships and in ways that would otherwise not be possible, because people might not turn to Judaism and each other the way they can in the sacred aging.
Well, work. Thank you. Towards the end of the book, let me, before we run out of time, you know, I had a professor once who said all theology is biography, and your essay on your personal journey with caring for your mom, how transformative was that in your life?
Oh, yeah. It was one of the most difficult things that I've gone through and I continue to go through. I had to grow up a lot to be able to insist on things that needed to be done as power of attorney that she couldn't handle for herself. And so, you know, it made me a more mature person. It made me grow in a way that I hadn't before. It's a sad thing every Friday night, you know, when we say the Misha Berach, she's the first person that comes into my head, you know. This is a long slog with vascular dementia. It's a very sad thing for me. And so the Misha Berach prayer is comforting.
What's the greatest of all the interviews that you did in the book, Tom? What's the takeaway for you? What's the thing when you finished, the book is out, you sit back and say, what did I learn from this experience? What was that?
Wow. Well, I guess I would say two things. There's no single answer, and that each of us needs to become our best selves. There's no universal answers to these questions. The main questions were, am I still a man? Am I still relevant? What's the meaning of my life? And am I still loved? Those are the questions around which the book is organized. Mm-hmm. And there's no single answer to those things. They're groups of answers. But for myself, I guess I would say I'm less afraid. This comes back to what we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. I'm less afraid of dying. I don't look forward to it, but I anticipate more injury and frailty. And I know I will accept those things in a without sort of becoming depressed and, you know, beating my chest and saying, why me? I believe Sam Karf when he says, you know, aging and death are taxes that we have to pay for being alive.
It's the price we pay.
Yeah. And it's okay. Yeah. Life is good. Yeah.
That morning prayer that he and Jewish tradition advises us to do, the Mode Ani, reminds us of the gratitude. And I guess
yes,
that does come through in all the essays, that people, despite their various positions where they were when you interviewed them, there is a sense of, you know, gratitude and a celebration of life.
Yep.
And a harvesting, which is a phrase we hear more and more and more in this business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dr. Tom Cole, thank you very much. Good luck. Continue good luck with the book, Tom. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me, and I look forward to seeing you in March.
Pretty soon. Yep. We'll see you soon, yep. I hope. Thank you.
Thanks again.
Okay, Tom. Thank all of you for listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. And again, we welcome your comments and suggestions to me, Rabbi Address, at jewishsacredaging.com. We also, again, invite you to visit the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. And if you'd like to continue to support the work of Jewish Sacred Aging, go to the homepage and click on the donate icon at the top, and it will allow you to make a tax-exempt donation to help further our work. Seekers of Meaning is recorded at the studios of Lubetkin Media Companies here in wonderful Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and we thank our producer, Steve Lubetkin. Thank all of you for listening. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address, and I look forward to greeting you on our next Seekers of Meaning. Shalom.